Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Speaking of the Warriors, Steve Kerr coming up in just about an hour. Always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. And it's a Monster Monday, presented by Merit America. Visit them at meritamerica.org/super. Yeah, a Monster Monday and a Victory Monday here on 95.7 The Game, as the Niners knocked off the Browns. Final score of 26-8. They're now 9-4 on the season. They head into their bye week and get ready for the Titans. The only thing standing between them and a 10-4 record is the bye and a game against the one win Cam Ward-led Titans. You got to feel pretty good about yourself if you're the 49ers. Now, okay, so I've graduated from hope to expectations on the postseason push. And now if you take that a step further and say, well, what would it take for you to graduate from hope to expectation in terms of their ability to actually win a game or two in the postseason? I think for me, Dibs, the one thing that I would need to see is the defense not allow single-digit points, but put up a good fight against a really good offense. We haven't seen that in quite a while, I think, since this defense got to their present day, which is without Fred Warner and without Nick Bosa. Go up against a team like Indianapolis in a couple of weeks who have, for the majority of the season, been one of, if not the best offense in the NFL, and instead of giving up 41, 42 like you did against the Rams a month ago, or even giving up 35 points or whatever the number is, 30 points to Tampa Bay, give up 24 and see if you can win that game 27-24. Give up 21 and win that football game 24-21. I don't need to see an incredible performance by the defense against a good team. I just need to see not terrible. And if you show me that you can at least be competent versus some of the better offenses in the league, then my hope maybe graduates to expectation in terms of postseason success for the team as well.
It just depends on the matchup, and I do think that the Rams in that spot, it was a bad matchup. The Rams were looking for revenge after the 49ers beat them on Thursday night, and you were still, I think, rolling with Mac Jones at that point, and you didn't yet fully have command of what you were trying to be as a team, and so the Rams came in and got you in a spot where you fell behind, and you couldn't recover, and I do think that's part of it, and I think about yesterday where you got the lead, and even though you trailed 8-7, you trailed for 30 seconds in that game.
And right back.
The 49ers are not a team that is built to come from behind. And I heard Kevin Harlan on the broadcast yesterday with Trent Green say the same thing about Cleveland. They're not built to come from behind either. So no matter who the 49ers play, if you go up against Tampa or Green Bay or Detroit in the playoffs and you're down by two touchdowns, it's going to be difficult for them because this offense is not constructed to go three wide. They never go four wide, four wide receivers. They always have a tight end out there, as they should with George Kittle. But when you get into throw-only mode, even though Brock Purdy is a really good quarterback, that doesn't suit what you're trying to do. So for me, it's more about your style of offense, and it's also the style of defense, where the defense can be out there and give up points, but field goals, yeah, they can't give up quick, easy touchdowns and get this offense in a hole.
But the other thing is, you would expect the defense, it is going to, you would think, get better as the weeks move along. One, because your youngsters continue to get more reps and more experience. But two, when Lucas last hour gave us the updates from Kyle Shanahan on his conference call today, Ben Bartsch expected to go on IR and his season is in all likelihood over. This Niners starting left guard, although of late he's been swapping in and out and sharing snaps with Spencer Burford at left guard. The other news, other than the Kyle Juszczyk rib fracture, they're going to check back in on him in a week. The other news was largely good about a lot of the absences. Sam Okwuonu did not play in this game, wasn't inactive. They say that they expect him to be ready after the bye for that game against the Titans. Tatum Bethune, who was doing a hell of a job filling in for Fred Warner as the green dot linebacker. Of late, it's been Curtis Robinson once Bethune went down, but they expect Bethune to be back as well. Kevin Givens also was an inactive this week. Maybe they get him back by the time the Titan games come around. Now, those are not players that are absolute game changers, but there's a difference between Tatum Bethune and Curtis Robinson. No knock on Curtis. His story is a great one. Tatum Bethune is a much better linebacker than Curtis Robinson. These are kind of similar acquisitions that you might get back that you could compare to someone like a Cleveland Furl or like a Keon White. Those are not big names. You get them in here, and they've been effective. You get a little bit of a healthier defense. The youngsters like Upton Stout, Malik Mustafa, Alfred Collins, CJ West continue to improve. This is a defense that, say, if they happen to play the Rams again or the Seahawks, when they play the Seahawks again, that will feel different in those matchups than they did when they played them most recently.
And I think that it all goes back to what I've thought the whole year about not only complimentary football, but the Robert Saleh factor and the Robert Saleh effect, especially when you lose Nick Bosa and you lose Fred Warner. It's pretty clear that this defense has to be one that is bend but don't break. You're not going to blitz very often. They don't. Even when you don't blitz, you're not going to get after the quarterback too often, although yesterday you had three sacks, which might be the high watermark of the year. You don't even need to check because yesterday felt like Sackapalooza.
It did.
They got after him so much.
And they pressured him a bunch more, too.
They did. And if you look at yesterday, and I'm going through my notes right now on how many explosive plays they gave up, which is a pass play of 20 or more, or a run play of 10 or more.
The touchdown catch by Fannin, that's one.
And I think that's the end of the list.
They probably had a couple of runs.
I see
a
Judkins run in the fourth quarter for 17.
Yeah,
that counts as an explosive, although I thought runs over 20 were the ones that counted. But outside of that, I'm looking at, you know, not much else. There was a pass to Bond for 17 before they ended up punting in the second quarter. But outside of those, the big touchdown, the 34-yarder to Fannin, and that run I was mentioning from Judkins, that might have been the end of the explosive. So you rush four, you bend but don't break, you rally up and you tackle, and you make teams go 8, 10, 12, 14 plays to score on you. The red zone defense has been really pretty sturdy the majority of the year, and that, I'm sure, is going to be the formula for this team defensively. You're probably not going to get a ton of takeaways. You're not going to sack the quarterback a bunch, and so... Yeah. You have to just make it hard on the opponents, and when you get the ball, you make it hard on their defense by doing the same thing.
The Niners sacked Spencer Rattler of the Saints three times in week two.
They rattled Rattler.
They rattled him. They got to him. But that was while Nick Bosa was still playing. So in terms of the post-Nick Bosa injury era this season, three sacks yesterday, the most the Niners have had.
Yeah, and I think... Unless you want to look at the Tennessee game coming up off the bye, yeah, you might be able to get a little bit more against Cam Ward because Tennessee is the 32nd best team in the NFL. And
Raiders are making a push to move to 32nd.
And the Saints are also really, really bad. But like the Giants have two wins, the Saints have two, the Cardinals have three, the Titans have one, and then the Browns have three. You've played
Raiders
some of the dregs.
So
but I heard Steiny earlier talking about, you know, what other team has played seven games against teams with three wins or fewer, and yeah, they're not the only one. The Patriots are the other one who've played, you know, because they've played.
Yeah, no one talks about the Patriots as being the result of why they're 10-2 is because their schedule's so dang easy. No one says the same thing about the Bears either.
Right.
The Bears' schedule has been super easy.
Has been, but they have two Green Bays and a Detroit left.
Well, so we'll see how they stand up.
Yep. Like, and they have the Niners left, too.
I don't think anybody's picking them to end up as the one seed in the NFC, not to take away anything that Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams and company are doing, but like we can poke holes if you need to see a team beat a lot of good teams in the regular season to really believe in them, then you don't believe in the current one seed in either the NFC or the AFC.
Yeah, and the one thing the Patriots and the Niners have in common is they face the NFC South. So the Patriots They whooped Carolina,
yep. They
beat New Orleans, and they were able to get by Atlanta and Tampa Bay. They also played Cleveland, the Patriots, that last place schedule,
yep.
So we're not pinning them with that. And I think the Bears also have a last place schedule.
Yep.
They finished in fourth last year.
Niners-Bears play each other because they were both
right.
in last
so
place.
So there you go. Yeah. I mean, we can look at it from any different direction, and the Niners have done it without their quarterback for most of the year and their pass rusher and their Hall of Fame linebacker. So you got to give them some props for that.
Like, this is how it happens. Like the Niners, you think back to 2019 when they first made the Super Bowl under Kyle Shanahan. I guess that wasn't technically a fourth place schedule. It was a third place schedule, but similar. They didn't have an incredible amount of super amazing regular season wins. Then the next year, they finished fourth because that was the curse of the MetLife turf where everybody tore their ACL early in the season, including Nick Bosa and others. They won six games that year, finished last in the NFC, in the NFC West. The next year, they had a last place schedule, Dibs. But guess what? Despite that, they only went 10-7 and had to win their final two games of the season just to sneak into the postseason. They did that, ultimately caught, you know, some lightning in a bottle, lost in the conference championship to the Rams down in LA. But like, the Niners have been through this before, where you come off of a really bad year, you kind of beef up a bit on an easier schedule, and you ride that into postseason success. No, of course, a lot of that was because Fred Warner and Nick Bosa were healthy those following years, and I get it's not the same this year, but what the Niners are going through in terms of the schedule isn't new. We can just be honest with ourselves, or I would ask other Niner fans to be honest with themselves and just say, you don't believe in them because you don't think they're good, not because of the schedule. Like, you just don't think they're that good. If that's the way you feel, then just be honest with yourself and don't cop out and say it's because of the schedule.
It can be both, and you could look at the schedule and think, well, they're not that good because of the schedule, and it's not like they struggled to beat Cleveland yesterday. They took care of a team that's not as good as they are, and I'm looking at the teams that have beaten them, winning percentage of 646, the teams that the Niners have beaten, winning percentage of 385. So they've fattened up by beating the teams they're supposed to beat.
Yeah.
And included in the teams they lost to, one of them is the Rams, who they also beat.
Yep. Yep. I mean, they have a couple of really quality wins, the Rams and the Seahawks. So we'll see what the rest of the season has in store. We're sponsored by Surfside. The Golden State Warriors are back. Cheer on your Warriors with an iced cold Surfside. Only 100 calories, 2 grams of sugar, and zero bubbles, so it's easy to sip and enjoy. It's not a seltzer, it's Surfside. Proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly. Steve Kerr of the Warriors joins us at the top of the hour at 5 o'clock, so about 45 minutes from now. When we come back, what about Brock Purdy and the way that he bounced back yesterday? Let's talk about the quarterback and what Brock did versus the Browns in cold and not really rainy or snowy, but windy Cleveland. We can break that down and a whole lot more when we come back. It's Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you right here on 95.7 The Game.
Dub Nation, it's Steve Kerr. You're listening to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Dibs, your picks stink.
Ah, that's a great one from Steve Kerr. He's joining us in about 40 minutes here on Willard and Dibs, except no Willard, it's Grandy, so Dibs and Grandy.
That's a flagrant, Kerr.
Plus,
you
have to make your next pick, Monday Night Football.
Oh, yeah.
The Giants in Foxborough taking on the Patriots.
And the pick is in, and
that in like 20 minutes.
I'm riding a 2-3 week, so I'm now 33-22. Shout out, Saint. 7-3-2-2.
And let me bring it up really quick. We can just recap what your weekend was.
Lions giving 2.5 to Packers is loser.
Packers wins by 7.
Chiefs giving 3.5 at Dallas is loser.
Dallas wins straight up in that
one.
But
a win for our bet against the midday show as Kansas City dips to 6-6.
You guys surprisingly might win that bet.
Now, I'm not surprised, and I said it back in August that I didn't think they'd make the playoffs.
Good for you. I never really believed.
Bengals plus 7 at Baltimore.
No sweat cash.
Is winner.
Because the Bengals won by 18 points in that game.
Yeah, that Baltimore is weird.
Well, like, Lamar's clearly not fully healthy.
Right. And I should have given out my Friday pick because I nailed that one in my pool, Chicago plus 7. That doesn't count. Thank you. Cleveland plus 5.5 against the Niners.
Nope.
Is loser.
Yeah. Wrong.
And tonight is a 7.5 point spread. The pick is in, and I'll share that coming up this hour.
Well, you didn't mention Washington plus 5.5.
Oh, his winner.
Because that game went to overtime.
Never in doubt.
I mean, it was in doubt.
I had written
overtime
it off.
Scary.
So I saw Denver score the touchdown. Your boy, Bo Nix, with a boop, 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 right down.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
On the field.
And then my other boy, Marcus Mariota.
Right. But I saw the Bo Nix touchdown, and it was time to do story time, and please bring up my Milky for my three-year-old. So I actually didn't see the Washington resultant touchdown, and I checked my fantasy app because I have Marcus Mariota on my bench.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, oh, they lost by one. Perfect. I couldn't have gone any better.
Did you go back and watch how the Commanders' last possession played out?
No.
They had a Terry McLaurin touchdown. Or it might have been ruled down to the one. It was really close. Touchdown might have been overturned if they had reviewed it, but it didn't stand because of a penalty, so it backs them up. It was from like the 30 or something like that. Then they faced a 3rd and 14 as a result partially of that penalty, and they hit a big play down the right side to Debo Samuel all the way down to like the 1 or the 2. He nearly gets in, doesn't quite get in. They can't score. They go backwards, can't score, face a 4th and goal. Of course, they have to go for it. They go for it and get it miraculously. And then they say, you know what? To hell with this. We're going for 2 and the win, which I think is the right call in that decision. And Nick Bonino, one of the best defenders in the NFL, bats Mariota's pass away. Incomplete. Game over. So the way that you cashed that pick, you got that pick right. It was by the skin of your teeth there with 4th and goal and a big 3rd down conversion too.
Yeah, and the whole thing started to unravel for me when they actually drove down and Jake Moody. Yes, that Jake Moody.
And you're in for a miss. Just end the game.
Just end the game.
They're covering right now.
Come on, Moody. Do what you do, Jake. You miss kicks.
Unless he's kicking for anybody but the Niners.
Yeah. So he makes that and I'm thinking, oh, Schmidt. Oh, Casey. This thing... I know how this ends. Denver scores a touchdown and I lose. I don't cover, but anyway.
You covered.
Yep.
No harm, no foul.
We'll see if I can get tonight's pick. I've been going back and forth. It's a little bit of a vacillation sensation, to be honest.
Nice.
Because,
vacillation?
You vacillate. Oh. You kind of teeter. You go back and forth.
I was thinking oscillate.
Lucas joining in.
Shut up, Lucas.
Read a book.
The number is Patriots. Patriots by 7.5. So that's the number that we'll go
with. Vacillation is the inability to decide between different opinions or actions. Okay. Indecision.
You learn something new every day. I need to sign up for like the AP word of the day.
My mom. The late, great Sue Dibley. She would cook dinner and my safe haven was to sit on the stool in the kitchen with her. Because my siblings were and still are monsters. And so I would bring the dictionary, and the game was flip open to any page, pick the hardest word you could find, and she would know the definition.
Wow.
Sue Dibley.
That's a fun game.
R.I.P. Yeah. So my vocabulary is, it's kind of bananas based on my mom.
A vacillation sensation.
Cha-ching.
I like
it. Yes, thank you.
I like it. Anyways, the pick is coming up right around 4:50. And it's Patriots minus 7.5. So we'll do that coming up in about 25 minutes. We'll see if Dibs can make it a 3-3 week coming up in just a little bit. All right, back to the Niners. The Niners victorious in Cleveland 26-8. This was an interesting day for the offense, Dibs, because they were like gifted great field position over and over and over again. So the Niners didn't really ever have to go on a long, sustained drive to score the points they needed to win this football game. So there's probably a good portion of the fan base out there who left the game maybe not being all that impressed by Brock Purdy. I know you and I, though, left very impressed by what Brock did, not because of any numbers. And you and I talked about this on Wednesday. If you were going into this game needing 300 passing yards and 3 touchdowns from Brock in order to be impressed by Brock and to kind of get back on the Brock train, if you had fallen off after what happened on Monday night versus the Panthers, then you were going to stay off the train because this was not the kind of game for 300 passing yards and 3 touchdowns. But I thought Brock executed what he was asked to execute to near perfection. And in the big moments of the game, it was when he was his best. I thought Brock had... honestly the best game of his season. When you all things considered, he was good against Arizona. I think he had a couple of passes in that game that could have been intercepted that were not. Largely, though, I can't remember a single time the ball was in harm's way with the Niners on offense. I thought Brock was really, really good.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to tip the grades. That's tomorrow, Grandy's grades. And I didn't see the grades that you gave, but it sounds like you probably gave him an A. And honestly, I was thinking about how I could not give him an A, because if you look at the numbers, they're not eye-popping. But the game flow and the things that he did and what you just said is the biggest part of it for me, because the ball was never in harm's way. Yeah, he got pressured absolutely. A bunch, and when he was pressured, he made the right throw. He got rid of it. He didn't make any real risky throws, and I'm just looking at my notes, and there were two or three, maybe even four throws that were just great throws. The Juwan Jennings touchdown, 7 yards out. He was open, but Brock was able to hit that back foot and just rip it, and that was just boom, perfect throw. The one to Kittle that set up the field goal at the end of the second quarter.
Yep.
He threw that into a spot where only Kittle could get it. The Pearsall one you mentioned before, where he threw it, I think it was from the right hash all the way to the far side of the field.
Two plays before the Kittle one.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was a great throw, and he had time, and he waited for the double move, but he ripped that all the way out to the sideline. So the numbers aren't phenomenal, but he did everything that he needed to do, and you add in the keeper on the read option from the 2 yard line, and he is able to saunter in, and then he hit the Dougie in the end zone afterward. He had a great game.
He did. He had an awesome game. And I think it was the perfect like example of how Brock needs to play. And again, obviously so much of what happened yesterday was colored by this being in Chicago, it being terribly cold and windy and Myles Garrett on the other side. Maybe the Niners need to lean into that kind of plan a little bit more often. But if Brock ever gets confused about what he needs to do in the majority of the football games he plays, I think he needs to look back at what happened yesterday, because you said it, Dibs, in the middle of your little soliloquy there, just talking about what Brock did. Maybe the most important throws that he made were the ones that he did not make. And by say did not make, the ones where he didn't actually try to complete them, where he just threw them away. Because where Brock has gotten in trouble, and what got him in trouble against the Panthers, was forcing passes that he should not have. And now, maybe he sees it, and there was an opening, but the second that that opening closes, or the second where you're a little late making that throw, the right decision is to not make that throw. So, like, there were a lot of, and you will be the first person to say this, Dibs, on Monday versus the Panthers, the vast majority of Purdy's throws, other than the turnovers, were good decisions and really good throws. So you have, in his game on Monday, a lot of great decisions and a lot of great throws with three stinkers, maybe four or five stinkers, because there were a couple that could have been intercepted that weren't. You just change those four or five stinkers into throwaways out of bounds, and you just move on to the next play. Suddenly your game goes from really bad to pretty dang good. And I think that's where Brock needs to grow the most. It is recognizing when to be aggressive and when not to be. And yesterday's game was definitely a game when you did not need to force anything, and he didn't. I thought he played really, really good.
Yeah, and he was smart when he got out of the pocket, and he was pressured. If nothing was open, he just threw it away. And when you're outside the pocket, you can throw it past the line of scrimmage. You don't even have to have anybody in the area. And he did that four or five times. And I was just looking at the stats earlier on Brock Purdy and pass attempts versus targets. He had 29 attempts, but he only had 23 targets, which tells me that six of those throws, no one was targeted.
True, good point.
Those are straight-up throwaways. And so he was 16 of 23 on targeted throws, and then the six other throws were just, get this out of my hands. Myles Garrett is near me. I can sense it. I know he's coming to get me, so let me go ahead and throw this away. So, yeah, I think it's something that he does well at times, but there are other times where he gets into that make-a-play gunslinger mode. And yesterday, I think, it was not going to be the time for that. You know, Cleveland was not going to put 30 points on you. You didn't have to win that game in a shootout. You just couldn't do what Cleveland did, which is muff a punt, catch a punt out of bounds, and give up a 66-yard punt return. You just couldn't have negative plays. And so I don't know if it was a point of emphasis from Shanahan and the other coaches, but the Niners played like that, where it's okay. Punts are cool, as I was thinking yesterday watching that game. Like, all right, Morstead, come punt, you know?
40-year-old Morstead.
Yeah, why not? Punt the ball. Make Cleveland do something special. And a lot of times they did something the opposite of special.
Yeah. Here's Brock Purdy after the game talking about kind of the mindset, the game plan going into this game in Cleveland, weather and all, everything else going on surrounding this game. Here's Brock on his mindset.
Coming here against a great defense like that and just the conditions that we were playing in, it comes down to protecting the ball and letting the defense do their thing. And then when we have the opportunities to strike on offense, we got to capitalize on it. So that was really the mindset, you know, last night when all the quarterbacks are going over the game and right when we got out to the field to warm up, like you could tell it was going to be that kind of game. So that was really our mindset.
And that was the right mindset to have. And I don't think it took a genius to recognize that that was the right strategy to go into this game with. But kudos to the Niners, Kyle Shanahan, all the offensive coaches, and Brock Purdy and the rest of the offensive personnel for executing that plan correctly. And I think it's where, again, there is the biggest room for growth for Brock Purdy, because this was not just a this year thing. He's thrown multiple interceptable passes in every one of his starts so far this year, other than this one. And in what, three of the four starts coming into this game, has thrown two or more interceptions in all of them. Like, this is a thing that wasn't just last week. It wasn't just this year. It also went back to last year as well. And if Brock can get into the mode of, all right, instead of going for a home run and feeling like I have to be the reason why we win every football game, if you can just be the reason why you don't lose a football game, you're going to win a good amount of football games. We get lost watching Patrick Mahomes when he was at his best, and he's been pretty good again this year. Maybe Lamar Jackson the last couple of years, Josh Allen last year and the majority of his career. We get lost in the amazing plays that these guys make. And I think we get in our head, that's what the best quarterbacks look like, because they can make these crazy plays where they break eight tackles and they fling a ball 70 yards down the field and it's a touchdown. I think the Niners, given what they need from their quarterback, it's just as simple as just avoid the back-breaking turnover, the back-breaking mistake, taking a sack on a big play that takes you out of field goal range, committing a bad penalty from anybody on the offense. I think good quarterbacking, Dibs, it often gets lost. It's just avoiding making the big negative play, and that's what Brock did yesterday.
Yeah, he was great at that, and the team was also really good at that. You had McCaffrey fumble twice against Carolina, once he got it back, once he didn't. And so interceptions and fumbles and all the rest of it. And yesterday, you just, you know, give Cleveland a chance to show you exactly who they are. And they're a team that is mostly sloppy. Shedeur Sanders didn't throw an interception. It's because he really didn't throw a pass. And Quinshon Judkins was effective on the ground, and you mostly kept him contained. They had the 190-yard drive for a touchdown, and that was it. And then you had their special teams make multiple mistakes that set you up in great spots. Sky Moore with a great kick return. They muffed a punt. They caught a kickoff out of bounds. And so, yeah, sometimes it's okay to just let the other team show you who they really are. You keep the ball in play. It's like you're a tennis player, and sometimes you're playing against somebody who is not as good as you, and you try to do too much, and now you're trying for too much on the forehand. You're making mistakes, and you're trying to do too much with the serve and volley, and all of a sudden now you're in a tiebreaker with somebody who's not as good as you, and you're thinking, what am I doing in a tiebreaker with this person? Sometimes it's okay to just put the ball back in play.
I hated playing against people like that.
Oh, that's me.
It's frustrating as hell.
I wish I was a little younger because we could get out there and play, because I played like a golden retriever where I would be back at the baseline, and everything that you would hit, I would get it back, not with a lot of force. You would have to generate all the power, because I'd either hit my little slice or hit my big balloon topspin up forehand.
Towards the baseline.
Just keep the ball in play. And, you know, for me, I had no choice as a 5'8" guy with not a big serve. Like, you're a bigger guy. You can probably serve and volley and generate a little bit more. But to the football analogy, if you're the Niners, yeah, Cleveland, go ahead and show me that we have to really bring more than, you know, just a 3-yard run here and a check down throw. And you know, we'll go ahead and punt and we'll see what you can do, Cleveland. And that's kind of what they did, you know?
And we're going to talk with Steve Kirk coming up in about 25 minutes here on Willard and Dibs. It's something Steve Kerr has talked about. It's something that Jimmy Butler has talked about when it comes to turnovers. limit turnovers, and just get more shots on goal. It's the same exact thing that you're talking about. Just give yourself more opportunities by avoiding making the bad mistake. And over the course of a full 60 minutes of football, of course, you're going to, if you do that against the elite team, that might not be enough. You might have to take some risks and some chances, and you hope that Brock is good enough in those moments to get it done. But against a lesser team like Cleveland, or maybe even last week like Carolina, although you won that game despite making those mistakes, as long as you just avoid those mistakes, you make fewer big mistakes than your opponent, you will win the football game. Doesn't mean you have to have a 70-yard touchdown,
right,
or a 40-yard run by McCaffrey or a 27-yard completion on every drive. It just means get your 3 yards here, your 7 yards there, your 5 yards there, convert a big 3rd and 7 here, a 3rd and 8 there, get a turnover there, a long punt return here. And all that added together is an 18-point win, and that's what it was.
Yeah, and you look at the Rams yesterday, and you ask yourself, how did they lose to Carolina?
Turnovers.
That's exactly right. Bryce Young was 15 of 20 for 206, and he had 3 touchdowns, and he had a couple of big fourth-down conversions, but Matthew Stafford threw 2 picks, and they fumbled, and so, yeah, that's the way that goes. And you mentioned the Warriors, and even going back to that Pelicans game from the other night, the Warriors only had 10 turnovers.
Yeah.
They were 12 of 47 from 3. Awful.
Yep.
Like, god-awful.
2 for 22 in the first half.
Right. So they couldn't shoot, and they weren't very good on twos, and you got out-rebounded, and you won the game by 8. It's because you didn't turn it over. You had 10 turnovers, and, you know, you got to the foul line a good amount, 16 of 20. Actually, they had 34 free throw attempts to your 20. So you got out-rebounded. You got mostly outshot, although the Pelicans weren't good either.
No, they were terrible.
But you hung in the game.
An ugly game.
You hung in an ugly game, though, because you didn't give away the freebies. And
yes, that's
where, like yesterday, the Niners, mistake-wise, I'm trying to remember what the biggest mistake was. Outside of the touchdown they gave up on just a blown coverage, that's about the only mistake that they made that was really galling, you know?
How many negative plays did the Niners have? They had the sack, Myles Garrett's sack of Brock. They probably had a couple of McCaffrey runs that went backwards.
Yeah.
And that's about it, right? Anything like 3 negative plays over the course of the whole game?
You had a Robinson negative one on a run in the 3rd drive, but 1st and 10, he loses a yard, big deal. CMC lost 3 yards. On a toss play.
I remember that
you
one.
You know how much I love those toss plays where
they toss, they do a lot of tosses.
A lot of tosses. And when it works, it's great. But when it doesn't, it's like, oh my God, that thing got blown up. And other than that, I'm not seeing too many other ones. There's the Mac Jones kneel down.
True.
Which crushing his average.
Yeah.
But
without counting kneel downs, we're talking about like three that you're seeing, maybe 4 or 5 at the very most.
Yep. Yep.
Negative plays over the course of an entire game. They had 64 offensive plays. There's a kneel down there, so 63 like regulation snaps.
Yep.
And you go backwards, what, 3 of them?
Maybe a little bit more.
Maybe 4.
First and goal at the 5 when they ice the game. McCaffrey loses 2 on the first down run. So there's a few of those where it's going to happen. You're going to lose yards against a good rushing defense. But in general, like the self-inflicted penalties – weren't there no holds again?
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first 2 orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
And you had Trent Williams was ineligibly downfield on a play. And other than that, you didn't really have, he had a false start as
3
well.
Penalties for 11 yards.
Right.
For the Niners.
Yeah, that is, if you're not going to light a team up with, you know, 35 points or more, you have to avoid the self-inflicted stuff, which they were able to do.
So if you go into a must-win football game, whether it's in the regular season to make the playoffs or it's in the playoffs, and you are at a relative talent deficit, and I think the Niners oftentimes, against the elite of the elite in the NFC, will be at a talent deficit when it comes to their offense versus the Niners' defense, right? Like if it's the Rams or it's the Seahawks, you're going to be at a talent deficit, that unit versus your defensive unit. How do you make up for that, and how do you win that football game? You're going to need your offense to be good, but you're going to have to play smart football.
Yeah.
You're going to have to avoid those negative plays. You're going to have to avoid turnovers. You're going to have to avoid penalties, and you're just going to kind of cut by cut, death by a thousand paper cuts, slowly over the course of a full game, you will make fewer mistakes, and you will win the football game as a result. That's kind of, I think, the Niners' new path, because it used to be score 30-plus points and pray the defense gets a stop or two. Now it's just play solid football in all three phases,
yeah.
And if you're better in all three phases, then you will have a shot to win that game.
And you played the George Kittle comment from a few weeks ago earlier in the show where he talked about how, you know, the offense is going to have to start to do things here, and, you know, with the defense so injured, well, yeah, maybe not, because the defense the last 2 weeks has been more than up to the test. And last Monday against Carolina, Brock Purdy was throwing picks and the offense was not absolutely humming. And yesterday it wasn't really either.
Absolutely. All right. We got to hit a break. When we come back, Dibs, you have a pick to make because Monday Night Football is beginning shortly. The Giants are in Foxborough taking on the Patriots. It's a big spread. We'll give you the number when we come back. Plus Steve Kerr in about 19 minutes right here on Willard and Dibs. And you're going to want to hear one, what the Browns had to say about Juwan Jennings, and two, what Kyle Shanahan said about Juwan Jennings and that whole scuffle that Juwan was involved in again for a second straight game post-game. You're going to want to hear everything that was said about this. That's what's coming up here on Willard and Dibs. It's Dibs and Grandy with you. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. Steve Kerr, the picks, and more Juwan drama. It's all on the other side on Willard and Dibs right here on 95.7 The Game.
Bay Area, it's Steve Kerr. You're listening to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. You know what, Dibs? I like your picks.
Oh, thanks, Coach.
Lucas is playing both sides. He last hour played the Steve Kerr saying, Dibs, your picks stink. Now he's playing Steve Kerr saying, Dibs, he likes your picks.
Yeah, well, in that case,
which one's true?
Steve, I'll just say it now, and maybe I'll ask him about this when he joins us in about 12 minutes, but I like your challenge, Steve. And that was, I'm sure you saw it, Grant. I don't know if you were doing post-game, but
Saturday.
It was a foul on the Warriors, yeah.
Yep.
And they were looking at it to see if it was a flagrant, because one of the Warriors had landed in the landing zone. And so they look at it, and it's clear that the Pelicans player pushed the Warrior defender into said landing zone, but we can't go ahead and look at everything at once because that's not what we were reviewing. Yeah. So
they first reviewed if it's flagrant.
And it's not a flagrant. So
and then Steve Kerr's like, okay, now I want to challenge if it was even a foul in the first place or who the foul was on.
And so I was actually listening to Tim and Tom at the time on 95.7 The Game, and they're just cracking up. And, you know, so now the ref already had a look at it. But now he has to go back and look at it again.
Yep.
And now after further review, it was deemed that, yeah, it was a foul on the Pelicans. So, yeah, it was a review followed by a challenge, and Tom Tolbert, who does the color commentary, is like, well, what if they want to challenge the challenge that was of the review? And I was like, this is just so stupid. Like, can we just play basketball here?
And as a result, I got the post game and half hour later than usual. Thanks a lot, NBA and reviews.
Right, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was a late one. Tomorrow, is that you again tomorrow?
Evan will be doing it tomorrow. 8 o'clock tip.
Yeah.
8 o'clock tip, which means probably midnight is the end of the post-game show.
Yep.
I would venture to guess. So.
Well, especially when it is Tim and Tom at home because, boy, they can get chatty. And I like it. I mean, I listen to them all the time.
Oh,
and
they crack each other up.
Oh, they're just like, it's a total buddy comedy. But if I was in your shoes waiting to jump in and do post, it's like, all right, you two.
Wrap it up.
You know, turn off the mics and go get a beer and continue this on your own dime.
Exactly.
You know.
Anyway, Steve Kerr's coming up in about 10 minutes. We got some business to get to before that because it is Monday night, which means Dibs has a pick to make. It is time to fade the Dibbers. All right, Dibs, you had a busy weekend. You picked 5 games, the 3 games on Thursday, the Niner game Sunday, and Sunday Night Football. You went 2-3 in those 5, and now you have a Monday night game to pick. You are 33-22 on the season, and the pick tonight is a tough one. Patriots at home versus the New York Football Giants, and they're giving 7.5 points. Patriots minus 7.5, Dibs, in Foxborough versus the Giants. What's the pick?
No, it's a tough one because something's got to give. The Patriots are good, but are they really this good? 10-2, best record in all of football, and they are at home, and they're given a boatload, and on the other side, the Giants, they're bad. Are they really this bad? Well, they actually might be this bad. They do get Jackson Dart back, and my guy Wandale Robinson, I need 94 from him in order to get a fantasy win. Probably not going to happen, but the Giants are battered. They're on to their second head coach of the year. He's an interim, and normally you have a team get a dead cat bounce when they get a new coach, but this team is not. They've not bounced, and they've lost 6 in a row. The Patriots have won 9 in a row, 4-2 at home, and the pick was in, and I've been going back and forth all day, but the more I think about it, when you look at this situation, Kelly Rowland, let me be your motivation. The Giants aren't motivated to win this game.
Wow.
The Patriots are. So I'm going to stick and stay with my original pick that I made 5 days ago. We're going to take the Patriots and lay the 7.5. Go-goosh. It's go-goo.
Wow. Okay.
No clapping? No cheering? No fading?
Got a board to run, but I'll...
Whatever.
I did what Willard likes to do. I tried to pick the pick. I went Giants plus 7.5, though, is what I thought you were going to pick. I don't think YouTube can see that at all. I went Giants plus 7.5, and I was wrong. I did not pick the pick.
Until about 10 minutes ago, I was going to flip the pick and take the Giants and the 7.5, but the more I think about it, they stink.
They do stink, but you're right. I don't know if New England is that good. They're pretty good.
Yeah, they are.
7.5 is a lot of points.
Yeah, and I mean, Jackson Dart coming back, he's been good. Boy, is he reckless, that young man.
Jameis not terrible, though. They should have beat the Lions in their last game.
They should have. They could have, but they didn't. They've lost 6 in a row, and I do think that we're getting into not full-on tank season, but for some teams, losing is winning.
We're getting there.
Yeah, losing is winning, and you've got, you know, they're the only team. No, you've got the Giants, the Raiders, the Saints with 2 wins. Tennessee's got 1, and they're clinging to that number 1 overall pick, I think, with all their might. So if you're the Giants, winning is actually losing, and losing is winning. So we're going to lay the 7.5 cuckoosh.
It's a lot to cover. We shall see if they do it. We'll give you, of course, the result tomorrow on Willard and Dibs and see if Dibs can get to 34-22, or if he'll fall to 23-33. Hey, did you hear what Shelby Harris of the Browns had to say about Juwan Jennings after the game yesterday?
Yep.
Here it is. Shelby Harris postgame in the locker room with some choice words for Juwan Jennings.
He's a and I want that known. Like, I see why he got punched in the nuts, because that's some, like, he said some things that you should not say to another man ever, but like, I don't respect it, because you say that, then run behind your O-line. That's some real soft shit, and I want that known. I see exactly why they punched in the nuts. I'm surprised nobody punched him in the jaw yet.
Okay, that's Shelby Harris post-game. I didn't see any like extracurricular activity after the game. Obviously, Monday night after the Panthers game, you saw all of that with Trayvon Merrig, or however you pronounce his last name. I didn't see that in this one, but clearly he said a couple of things that upset not just Shelby Harris, but a lot of the Cleveland Browns to the point where you have Shelby Harris bleeping around talking about Juwan Jennings.
And I think it might have happened when you had somebody get hurt. A Browns player was hurt on the field, and I thought that that was when he said whatever he said. I don't know what he said, but clearly Juwan Jennings is saying things that are agitating people to where he got punched in the biscuits last week. And then this one, you've got a guy coming out here and, you know, invoking Santa, ho, 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 in a different sort of a context. But, I mean, I was stunned because I didn't really see it
in
real time. And I don't know if we're ever going to find out exactly what he said, but clearly it was something that you don't say. And Myles Garrett actually also came out and said, I don't know how he was raised, but I was raised, if you don't have something nice to say, you don't say anything at all. It's like, whoa.
I wonder what he said. Kyle Shanahan on his conference call earlier today was asked about this as well. Here's a little more than a minute, a back and forth with Shanahan and reporters on the conference call about this Juwan Jennings post-game situation.
A couple Browns players had some strong words about Juwan after the game. did you see what they said, and what was your understanding of his involvement and whatever went down while Malik Collins was being carted off?
Yeah, my understanding was, I mean, it had nothing to do with Malik. We got so much love for Malik. It just sounded like there was players standing around for a while because of the injury, and then they got chirping at each other, and I don't know what words were said, but it sounded like he offended some guys with the words, but it was just about words during an injury timeout.
Is there anything that you have a conversation with him about after that, or it's just kind of the natural flow of the game?
No, I mean, I talked to Juwan. I asked him about it, but not in, like, I love how Juwan plays. I think Juwan plays to the whistle as well as any player in this league. Is extremely aggressive and plays as hard as he can to the whistle, and he's been doing that, as Niner fans know and you guys know, since he's been here. I think sometimes that offends other players and rubs people the wrong way because they're not used to people going that hard to the whistle. But I think what JJ is very good at is not breaking rules. It's just like at Arizona last year when he went to the whistle so hard it offended some of their corners and they started throwing punches. And unfortunately, JJ got kicked out too, but not because he didn't throw a punch or anything. And I think JJ has been real, real good at not breaking rules that way. And he gets other guys to break them a lot on him.
Shanahan has his guys back.
And it was a great pivot because he immediately pivoted to how hard he plays on the field, and he's right. And he plays to the echo of the whistle, and Shanahan's right. He plays with an unbelievable physicality and a toughness, but this is not that. This clearly was comments that he made, word choices that he used in a stoppage. I don't know if it was about Malik Collins, and Shanahan's right, like former 49er. I don't think that... Yeah. Juwan, unless he has a personal beef with him, he's saying anything about Malik.
But... And he just suffered a season-ending injury, and everyone could tell it was serious.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know what he could have said that would have garnered that reaction, but clearly, whatever it was, the Cleveland Browns were taken way aback in that moment.
Yeah, the way that the Browns reacted, and by the way, we got Steve Kerr coming up in just a couple of minutes here on Willard and Dibbs, Dibbs and Grandy with you. The way that the Browns reacted makes it seem like what was said was not about the football game, and it was something personal. Because I don't know if these NFL players are reacting like that if it's not. And what Shanahan said, Juwan is great at not breaking any rules, and there's no rule about talking about personal things. That's kind of maybe an unwritten rule that you don't talk about that, right. Those sorts of things. But there's no rule from the NFL that says you can't trash talk whatever you want. But We don't know exactly what was said.
And there's trash talk, and then there is speech that maybe goes across the line. And I've never been a pro athlete. I've never been an NFL player, obviously. So I don't know where that line is. But you don't often have reactions like that where a player comes out after the game and says, yeah, he's a blank. And, you know, he says what he says, and he runs behind his offensive line. That's soft and this and that. I mean, clearly what he said and what he did was not well-received by the Cleveland Browns.
Absolutely not. And it's now back-to-back weeks where there's something extra going on with Juwan Jennings. I think Kyle Shanahan is right. That's generally a good thing, and you want that kind of stuff on your team. You just don't hope it. You hope it doesn't cross any kind of personal threshold. But I don't know. We'll see how the Juwan Jennings experience continues. What I can say about his play on the field, specifically of late, Dibs, I thought he was awesome yesterday, and he only had, what, the four catches for 39 yards and a touchdown. You break down what the catches were, though. His four catches, three first downs and a touchdown, and three of the catches resulted in points. They came on drives that ended in points. So he might not have had a gigantic day in terms of catches and yards. He did have a touchdown, but he had a number of big, big catches in big moments that led to points for the Niners.
And he largely has been their number one receiver of late. And, you know, Ricky Pearsall is, I think, still working his way back, and maybe the knee won't allow him to be as good as he was earlier in the year. Kittle and McCaffrey, of course, are the two prime weapons. But when it comes to the receiver room, a lot of it's Juwan Jennings. And when you need a big play, it's Juwan. And a little bit of Pearsall and a little bit of D-Rob. And, you know, Kendrick Bourne, he had, I think, a target, not a catch. So he had one opportunity. But by and large, when you need it, like you said, three of his four catches were first downs or touchdowns. That was big time.
So four of four were first downs or touchdowns. Three first downs and one touchdown, his four catches. He had a catch for 12 yards on first and 10. He had a 7-yard catch on 3rd and 6.
Yep.
He had a 7-yard touchdown catch on 3rd and goal from the 7, and he had a 13-yard catch on 3rd and 11. So you're talking about not only 4 first downs, if you include the touchdown as a first down, but you're also including 3 of the 4 catches on 3rd downs that either got into the end zone or moved the stick. So the biggest possible moments, Brock turns to Juwan, and Juwan answered, and he was good. So you're right. It is kind of just Juwan in the wide receiver room right now. It's been enough having just McCaffrey, just Kittle, and just Juwan. You might need more from some of the others later on in the season, but we'll see how it goes moving forward. He has been really good of late. We got Steve Kerr coming on in just a little bit here on Willard and Dibs. It's Grandy in for Willard, so Dibs and Grandy with you. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station, and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios.